agreed with Lansdale. A member of Eisenhower's private kitchen cabinet, McCloy was also chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations, and he sat on the boards of the Ford Foundation and a half dozen of the richest corporations in the country. On the morning of April 13, 1954, when McCloy read Reston's story about the Oppenheimer case, he found the news profoundly disturbing. "I didn't give a damn if he was sleeping with a mistress who was a communist," he recalled later. McCloy had been seeing Oppie regularly at the Council on Foreign Relations and had no real doubts about his loyalty, an opinion he did not hesitate to share immediately with Eisenhower. "I am very distressed, as I assume you are, over the Oppenheimer matter," he wrote the president. "I feel that it is somewhat like inquiring into the security risk of a Newton or a Galileo. Such people are themselves always top secret." Ike lamely replied that he hoped the distinguished Gray Board would exonerate the scientist. McCloy felt strongly enough about the whole matter that at the end of April he was easily persuaded by Garrison, who had known McCloy since their Harvard Law School years, to attend the hearing as a last-minute defense witness. McCloy's testimony produced some memorable exchanges as he tried to raise issues that bore directly on the very legitimacy of the hearing. He began his defense of Oppenheimer by questioning the Gray Board's definition of security. "I don't know just exactly what you mean by a security risk. I know that I am a security risk, and I think every individual is a security risk. I think there is a security risk in reverse. We are only secure if we have the best brains and the best reach of mind. If the impression is prevalent that scientists as a whole have to work under such great restrictions and perhaps great suspicion in the United States, we may lose the next step in this nuclear field, which I think would be very dangerous for us." When Garrison asked him about the Chevalier incident, McCloy responded that the Gray Board ought to weigh Oppenheimer's willingness to lie in order to protect a friend against his value to the country as a theoretical physicist. This line of argument, of course, greatly unsettled the Gray Board, for it suggested that there could be no absolutes in matters of security, that a value judgment had to be made on the merits of each individual, which AEC security regulations did, in fact, recommend. During his cross-examination of McCloy, Rob countered with a clever analogy. "Did the chairman of Chase National Bank employ anyone who for some time had associated with bank robbers?" "No," said McCloy. "I don't know of anyone." And if a Chase branch manager had a friend who volunteered that he knew some people who planned to rob the bank, wouldn't McCloy expect his branch manager to report the conversation? McCloy, of course, had to answer yes. McCloy understood that this exchange had damaged Oppie's case, and the more so when Gray returned to the analogy a short time later. "Would you leave someone in charge of the vaults about whom you have any doubt in your mind?" "No," said McCloy, but then he quickly interjected that if an employee of doubtful background nevertheless knew more about the intricacies of time locks than anybody else in the world, I might think twice before I let him go, because I would balance the risks in this connection. When it came to the mind of Dr. Oppenheimer, he said, "I would accept a considerable amount of political immaturity in return for this rather esoteric, this rather indefinite, theoretical thinking that I believe we are going to be dependent on for the next generation."